up, y'all? This is Tony Powell, and you're listening to Powell to the People, the podcast, episode 14. As I told you last week in episode 13, this is a two-part series where I work with the guys from Fireside Chats, John Menti, Maurer, and Features. And we had these great panel discussions that talked about the world of hip-hop and music and comic book culture and how they all merged together. And we did these things live in front of a live audience at the Hackensack Meridian Health Stage 17, right downtown, right above the Madison Square Garden. So last week we had Curtis Blow and Sean Martinborough, but this week we stuck our fingers, stuck our hands back into the hip hop pie, and we had a member of Leaders of the New School, Dinko D, was our hip hop guest, and we had as an artist, we had Rob Stahl, who is one of the premier inkers and pencilers. I learned these terms. I didn't even know. I mean, I thought I knew, but I mean, he's one of the premier artists in the world of comic books. And when you hear what he's done, it just kind of, it humbles you. So again, here we are, and I hope you enjoy the panel. And again, if you liked it, and if you have some commentary, please hit me up on Twitter at Comic Tony Powell, or you can hit up the Powell to the People podcast page. That's Powell to the Peeps, P-O-W-E-L-L, the number two, the letters D-A-P-E-E-P-S, Powell to the Peeps on Twitter. Or you can go on our Facebook page. That's Powell to the People on Facebook. And I think we have the live video of it posted on the Facebook page. So give it a listen.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Con After Dark. This will be our third night in a row, and Con is starting to get
set
to
in.
It feels like it's been about a month of doing this over at New York Comic Con. I don't know. Have you ever been to New York Comic Con?
First time yesterday.
Yeah. Nope. I haven't been there.
Nope.
I drove by there in traffic.
It's an experience.
It's pretty hard to get in there now these days.
Yeah.
Pros.
Yeah. It's so intense.
Guys trying to get in it.
What you guys don't see is we have IVs of coffee tucked under the table just to stay awake right now.
Yep.
It's good. Yeah.
There's a pallet of monsters in the back. It's getting bad. But we're coming to you live from the Hackensack Meridian Health Stage 17. And tonight we are once again joined by our guest host, Sandwiches. AKA Tony Powell.
Sandwiches. We got to clear this up.
You got to invite us to it. We don't know what that means.
The sandwiches.
Go ahead, Tony.
Here's what happened yesterday, Maurer. You know, like last name first name last, and then, John, he goes by Menti, and I was like, okay, and then Features, So I said, maybe I need a cold name, like that.
Sandwiches.
Right.
So the question that came to my mind, I was hungry, it was lunchtime, I said sandwiches, I'll go with that, thinking it would be done.
And they ran all
yesterday,
the way with
but it. Yeah, but now we, 24 hours later, we're still in it.
It continues.
Oh, 24 hours later. I told you this could be months.
Yeah,
of this.
It could be. Yeah. So
we've got shirts being designed right now.
With your face in the sandwich.
I guess,
man,
it could be worse.
It could be worse.
Could be.
I mean, I could have said a lot of things, off the top of my head at that time of day. So, I'll go with it. Crazy. Rock with it. Tonight we're going to be talking about the crossroads of comics and music, which leads us to our amazing guests. First, Leaders of the New School, legendary artist, Dinko D. Thank you for joining us.
Yo, thank you for inviting me, man. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be here.
Man, I'm look.
I just came from Baltimore Comic Con. I just came from Baltimore Comic Con. That was my first one with my man Rob Flo. He invited me out there, and we had
Rob Flo.
I got a nickname now too.
Must be something about the building.
I'm doing 2 million things now. Rob Flo is my DJ. That's my DJ. He did my mixtape. Rob Stahl, excuse me.
Well, then Rob Stahl,
it's all good.
Incredible artist. Rob Stahl is also joining us.
I knew Rob Flo was already taken. I was just going with it.
He was trying to get the web domain for a while. With that being said, I think this is just the ultimate panel for a discussion like this. So the first thing that I'd love to go over, if we could, is going down the line. First, we'll start with music. I wanted to talk about the creative process. And then I wanted to see if we can find the actual crossroads themselves, about where these would connect. Something like an artist for comics, as well as a musician, a lyricist, so on and so forth. So, Dinko, if you don't mind, what's that process like for you?
Well, the process is absorbed from everything I do in life, from your family, from walk into the store, from what you see on TV, you absorb those different contents and you try to create a new form out of it. You know, whether it be in art, whether it be in music, a song, that's what you basically do. So I just take everything from life and create life stories and life journeys and make it its own creative process.
Absolutely.
And you said the key word stories there. You're telling stories in your music from your experiences and tying that to something that somebody else can relate to and bring back.
Exactly.
So life is writing a story for you while you're living it.
Yeah, well, it's not always, and sometimes the story might just be a product of the story. It doesn't have to be the story itself. You know what I'm saying? It could just be a side component of something like an idea or a look. You know what I'm saying? A style of clothing. It's different arts to it.
We just went Inception on that.
Yeah, that was an amalgamation of things. there's a lot going into that one.
It's different. You know, everything forms into something.
So then taking off what Dinko just said, Rob, what would be the process for you then? And then how would you kind of correlate that with music?
Well, creatively is very similar
mm-hmm.
because it's all expressing and expressiveness and creative expression. Or whether you're a comic book artist in a sequential art or just a visual artist. Like when you think about like some of the best painters, like classical American painters, like, I don't know, Norman Rockwell mm-hmm. or you know, they had the ability to tell a complete story within a single image.
Right.
So it's all expressive. So in that sense, it's very connected in that way, you know, and it's all telling a story. You know, when you think of song lyrics, we could go back and forth about like some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's Stevie Wonder or Bob Marley or Bob Dylan or what have you. You know, they had that ability in song lyrics to tell stories. You know, and so it's very similar in that respect.
Now, real quick, we did get our first question from our chat. So we are live. And our first chat, we have Tara wants to know what everybody's favorite comics are as far as our guests are concerned. So,
Well, Fantastic Four was always one of mine. All the Spider-Mans, there was a time I had periods. Like I go to, you know, sometimes I go through periods when I go to a comic store and I'm like, yo, I'm on the Spider-Man. I'm on the Marvel Saga.
Sure.
I'm on the Punisher. You know what I'm saying? Nightcrawler. Hmm. It was, you know, I had different times of those immediately that come to my head. Those
Absolutely.
Were some of the, you know what I'm saying, ones that I was into. But I used to get it was the Amazing Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man.
Spectacular Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
It was like three of them.
Amazing Spider-Man. Amazing is that's like the hallmark. Though.
Yeah.
That's
the hallmark.
Yeah.
One, right?
Yeah.
But I used to collect all, you know what I'm saying? I started getting to all of those until it was time to move. And then I'd leave my collection somewhere and I'd be mad like,
oh, no.
No.
Yeah.
We've all done that, too.
Of course.
No.
And I'm still thinking about that collection. Like, it was so thick, man. I was building it. And
somebody's retired on
somebody
you.
I just bought a new house for the collection. But, you know, I just started back. But I've always been into comics, you know what I'm saying, from young. Like, I used to do art. Like, when I was young, I was definitely into art and stuff like that. But, yeah, those were some of my few favorites.
That's awesome. All right. Right.
Yeah, Fantastic Four, too. When I was a kid, I identified with, like, creative teams.
Mm. Okay,
like,
yeah.
The artists. Like, when I was younger, me and my buddies, it must have been the second or third grade. And we understood at a young age the whole creative process. We knew that there was a writer, a penciler, an inker, a colorist, so on. And we sort of, amongst ourselves, delegated those duties or responsibilities to do, and then we created our own books, sold them to like our classmates at recess for like a quarter or whatever.
But
we understood the whole creative process, so I like gravitated towards the art teams. So for me, Fantastic Four, like the quintessential Fantastic Four art team, was Jack Kirby and Joe Sinnott.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
So I mean, there's other inkers that I liked over Jack Kirby, like Chick Stone or Mike Royer, but FF, Kirby Sinnott FF, John Romita Sr. is my favorite, all-time favorite Spider-Man artist. I like his son stuff too, but for me, the team I identified with as a kid was Gil Kane Pencils and John Romita Sr. inks over Gil Kane Pencils, because he added that sort of finesse, that smoothness to it,
yeah.
mm-hmm.
where if you had other inkers inking Gil or Gil inking himself, it was kind of stiff.
Sure.
But Romita added that flow to it. So those are the two for me as a kid that stuck out in my head. Like that Romita Gil Kane Spider-Man, that's Spider-Man to me.
Hmm.
You know?
And you brought up creative teams.
Yeah.
And everybody attaches them. For me, when Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale come together on Long Halloween, like that is magic to me.
Yeah.
Now, we're looking at a new team in front of us right now.
Mm.
How did this come together?
It's a new team,
gonna,
man.
I'm just going to hold that up, too, at the same time.
It came together, like, me and him just met naturally as humans first. You know what I'm saying? It was real organic. We just met.
We got a lot of the same friends, too.
Right, we got a lot of the same friends, so we just met through mutual friends, and we just vibed. And, you know, his energy was great. And, you know, he had that first, that's the first drawing I had seen him with. He had that.
And like, he was working on that. He saw that and he was like, that's my logo. That's my new logo. I said, no, it's not. That's my logo.
All right.
I said, I could do you one.
Right. And it led into that, man. So it's just been, and ever since then, man, the relationship's been good. You know, when I come to Boston, he comes check me. When he's out here,
no doubt,
I come check him, you know, and it's been growing, but it's just, we're just brewing it up right now and it's beautiful and everybody's loving the images that he's creating, especially the image like that for me, like.
But on the energy of that though, I don't mean to interrupt, the respect was already there for what he had already done.
Sure.
Because I'm a music head and a hip hop head, and hip hop culture as a kid, you know, that's sort of part of my artistic background. You know, I did graffiti, but I was all into hip hop. So just from following, you know, groups that I like, the respect was already in place.
Okay.
So when I met him, it all just synced up. You meet people that are unapproachable and got their head up their ass.
They're approachable, they're just not the energy, the vibe.
They're not real.
Yeah.
They're not real.
And throughout the history of hip hop, you have that visual element. From, you said, graffiti or even the clothing or, you know, album covers.
Right.
Everything there had a purpose and a thought. So it makes sense for comics to come into that.
Yeah.
We were talking last night with even TV shows and soundtracks now. You're not getting as many scores, but you're getting, you know, songs as that connection.
Absolutely.
Right.
And Luke Cage and even Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, kicked it off in a new way.
Guardians stayed on the Billboard's top 200 for like 16 weeks in, straight before going platinum.
I think the Guardians soundtrack, the, you know, when they started out with Come and Get Your Love, I mean, for me, and this is what I thought when I saw it the first time, and that's how they opened that movie. I said, wow, you know, Disney's been really, really creative with Pixar. Pixar did something that Bugs Bunny used to do. They put adult jokes inside of this made for kids medium. And so when I saw that, I said, wow, that's 1970s. Come and Get Your Love. Redbone, I guess, is the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And right away, I'm looking around the room. I'm in the theater, and all the old heads like me are like, wow, okay, that's kind of wild. That's kind of funky. And it took off. And then, you know, ending it on a Jackson 5 song, I just thought was really, really clever. And that arc was great. And then you see that same thing repeat in Deadpool, you know, with the use of music. And then we talked about it last night, Luke Cage, you know, where they're using these, you know, almost like a New York Undercover style, where they're bringing real artists in to sing at the club as part of the soundtrack of the show.
Right.
It's changed the game, I think. You know, and it's created, I guess, a new avenue for artists like yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
So
something I also find interesting, even moving beyond soundtracks, is there's something that recently happened. I think it was about a year ago. There was a Black Canary book. And for those unaware, Black Canary is a Green Arrow character. She's got the sonic scream. She can yell and take out buildings. She's phenomenal. But she quite literally has an album that goes with her comic. So in this variation, in this version of her story, she has a band, and that band released two albums.
Wow.
And those albums tell more of the story of Black Canary's history.
That's kind
of
hot.
And so that we're seeing this cool...
That accompanied the comic book?
What was that?
I was asking a question. Yeah. Is that something that accompanied the comic book?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, you had to get them separately. So if you Google it, you can find there's a website where you can get the two albums from.
Okay. I'm going to date myself. But... some of y'all remember Power Records?
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember Power Records from like the '70s?
Sure.
Where they had the little record insert with the comic
book?
Right.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I
have messing with me.
You gotta cut it out of the thing and you gotta help get it.
Google
black.
It.
Yeah, so you can get it out.
Google it. So they took a lot of the classic Marvel stories and they did their version of the book that was on the stands or in the comic shops at the time. And they did like a recorded record that was like an insert, like a 45.
Mm-hmm.
They go for a lot of money right now. I'm talking about.
They go for so much money right now. It's ridiculous.
Keep them intact? So, absolutely.
Well, yeah, but you know what I'm talking about. So as a kid, you could put the record on and then play it and then follow along with the comic book and all of that. And so,
yes, this be reinvented, done in different ways, creative process, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, I hear laughter out there.
We got another question from the chat room.
It's the OG podcast. Recognize.
So we got Snakebite Cortez.
Snakebite, that's my bro.
All right. As a musical artist, what advice can you give an original visual creator to help them create a market for themselves in an already established and flooded market?
Wow, that's a loaded question.
Snakebite, do you want to just host this?
That is a loaded question.
He done went there.
Snakebite is a monster.
Yeah.
He flexes on many different platforms. That's my brother. We've worked on projects together. Recently, we worked on one for Lion Forge with legendary artist Larry Stroman. Lion Forge Black Owned Company.
Let me give a shout out to our new sponsor. Hey, sports fans. Football season's here and it's time to get in on the action with Bookie.net. That's my new sponsor, Bookie.net. MyBookie.net is the industry-leading sports action website that offers real Vegas odds on football, baseball, and all your favorite sporting events. You can take a side, the total, or you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score. I know I'm no good at that. MyBookie.net lets you play online and win big. Use promo code POWEL when you register for your account and get 100% sign-up bonus. Get a 100% sign-up bonus when you use the promo code POWEL. Did the game already kick off? Don't sweat it. MyBookie.net has in-game live action on every major league event, even esports. That's right. You see them kids playing them video games? Esports. You can bet on that. There's no better time to join MyBookie.net than today. Go to MyBookie.net to open an account and start winning. Use promo code POWEL when you register for your account and get a 100% sign-up bonus. Get in on the action. Visit MyBookie.net's website today and use promo code POWEL to get a 100% sign-up bonus. MyBookie.net, promo code POWEL for a 100% bonus. No deposit necessary. Terms and conditions apply for entertainment purposes only. Void where prohibited.
What advice do you guys have to make that mark in this flooded?
Why don't you grab that?
What do we make the mark as what?
So I'll read it again for Snakebite.
What he's talking about? Because it was a paragraph. Right?
Paragraph 3, line 7.
It was thorough coming from Bite.
Index 2. What advice can you give an original visual creator to help them create a market for themselves in the already established and flooded market? So how can they make their own market in this world?
Wow. With new ideas, you know, it takes new ideas.
Yeah,
new,
being original, taking risks.
Right, taking risks. You might have that thing that don't shine at first, you know. Keep rubbing it, keep polishing it, change it up. You got to keep reinventing the product. That's all, whatever you're doing, the art.
Mm. And I think, you know, it goes across all platforms. That first no, that first failure.
Yeah.
Is not the end. That's the first step.
No, right? That's good sometimes. You know, it makes you go harder.
I mean, how many times did you get told no before you got that big yes?
You want to hear a story.
That's why we're talking on my...
I got a story. there's this thing called a form letter that not just in comics, but I would imagine in any kind of area of entertainment where, and in this instance, I'm referring to Marvel Comics. I had submitted the traditional process as you put together samples, and whether that's writing samples, pencil samples, inking samples. So I had a little bit of both. I had pencil samples and inking samples from Marvel. And this is in the early 90s. So I had what was, and you can identify it right away. It's this printed letter and then they handwrite your name, like Dear Robert handwritten, and then everything else is printed. So it's just standard that they send out to everybody. Right. They say, oh, we appreciate your recent submission to Marvel Comics. Unfortunately, it takes many years of long, hard practice. And then they just completely destroy you,
check
right?
Check back with us in a couple weeks.
Exactly. Exactly. So that was 93. And 94 was, I think, the year that I broke in to Marvel. So wow. My first mainstream published work was Marvel. So what I did is, when I was living in New York, I framed that first rejection letter with my first check from Marvel in the same frame. And I hung that above my drafting table in my studio in New York.
So that's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
That's how you do it.
You say, oh, no, because you almost take that personal.
Yes. Yeah,
they're telling you
that you're not
that
good
you
enough.
Can't do something that you know you can do.
Right.
And they're telling you it takes years. Meanwhile, you've invested years in doing it.
1 year later.
Wow. But that's all they wanted. They wanted you to wait the year and reapply, and they were waiting for you. So what was that first project?
Man, what was it? It was I just referenced Larry Stroman. It was an issue of What If. Mm. Oh. No, that's not it. That was the first superhero stuff.
Okay.
I did like special like side stuff, like Scooby-Doo, and I mean crazy stuff that it was a job though.
Yeah,
you know, and it got my foot in the door, but they have like different departments at Marvel and DC, like licensing will put you on different things. So, and sometimes the licensing gigs pay a whole lot better than the regular assignment work. So it was a couple of small things like that. But the first superhero stuff was an issue of What If. What If number 71 or 72 with Larry Stroman. What if it was like, what if the gamma bomb spawned a million Hulks or something?
Wow.
Like that. Yeah. Yeah.
What If series was great.
Yeah.
Now,
so what if a gamma bomb?
Tell us a story.
Boys and girls.
Now, Dinko, do you have any, you know, parallel story to that, you know, where you were coming up in music and you got that note that crushed you and made you drive harder?
Oh, yeah, man. It's constant. It's all day, every day. And that don't change, you know. Like, the second album we did called Time, The Inner Mind's Eye, the Endless Dispute with Reality. That was actually inspired, like that was an idea I came up and busted through some ideas at me, but to do it like a comic book cover with the four chrome domes, with the molecules behind it, with the clock in the middle, you know what I'm saying, with space behind it. Like, it's just, I love that art. But the first album, we told them what they wanted to do, and they was like, nah, we picking this cover, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, yo. So now I actually hated my first album cover, like, can't see us. It's like far away. Like everybody faces everybody else's album. You see their face clear. If you look at our album, it looked like we going down the toilet. You know what I'm saying? So I was told no. Like, I was like, yo, let's do this, and they picked it. You know, you learn things. But then that second album, we have much more freedom to do what we wanted, and that was the idea. But I love that cover. Like, we worked with it, and we actually used somebody who was from our school, who was doing art and visual stuff.
Nice.
And we gave him the ideas and told him exactly what he wanted, and he put it together. Kevin Woods, my boy Kevin Woods.
You might have actually inspired Marvel recently, because they've done, what, 30 now hip-hop variant covers where they took classic hip-hop albums?
Yeah.
50.
50? 50.
Wow. He schooled me right there.
Yep. Is this the original? It was like a year or so ago? Yeah, Axel Alonso, he put that together.
And, you know, they were phenomenal, but it shows that bond. They didn't go with much else. They had all of the classic hip-hop albums there.
Dope.
And that just goes back. The hip-hop music comic connection has been there.
And it's always been in pieces. Like, you know, didn't somebody do the EPMD cover? You were
Absolutely.
Man, you saw that cover.
You saw you see snippets of it.
Pieces of it.
Throughout, like, the years. You know, there was Mike Bear and Buzz, two real good friends of mine, back from the Harris Comics days. They did, remember the Def Jam campaign?
Yeah.
Right.
Where they had Method Man. And they did that. And then, you want to tell another story?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Everyone sits fire down off. Indian style. And
please, Rob, float. I mean,
Rob, start the campfire.
Okay, when I had my studio here in New York, the I was working with two brothers. One was local, Chris Walker. Shout out to Chris Walker. Caron Grant. Shout out to Caron Grant. I'm bringing full circle with the reference to the Marvel hip hop variants, because me and Caron Grant were in a studio together, and our regular assignment for Marvel was Iron Man. And this predates like all the hype from the Iron Man movies. But one of our main things, and while we were a studio, me and Caron also worked for Red Pill Productions, which did stories. This was kind of when like web comics were like experimental. They really didn't know what they were doing, but there was access to that platform. So Red Pill Productions was directly connected to the Matrix. My old homie Steve Scrooge, who I did cover art with at Marvel, he was doing conceptual art and storyboards for the Matrix films. So this was sort of like an offshoot of the movie stuff. So the website did independent stories, or stories that were independent of the movie. So they might focus on one character from the Matrix movie, like Saga. And then they'll give us a story, me and Caron Grant. They gave us a story to, like, sort of elaborate. Almost like a what-if concept. Like, what if Saga, this happened to her or whatever. So we did, I guess, like an eight-pager that was collected within the website with a whole bunch of other artists from the business. Like Steve Scrooge, Paul Chadwick, Joff Darrow. They all did stuff. So our main reason for forming the studio was to do comic book stuff, but to also to tap in to that other area in entertainment, i.e. music, that we were so turned on by, to actually, you know, have a truer representation of comic book art. Because we were seeing it being done, but in our opinion, it wasn't being done properly. Yeah. So we were trying to put an end to that, and we got on some really interesting assignments. You know, we work with Guru. Yep. Virgin Records, Jazz Mataz, 3 Street Soul. Phenomenal. We did stuff for Tommy Boy Records. We did things for the Fader magazine. So that was sort of like our introduction for ourselves into this arena, you know. But that was the main objective. And then Caron Grant actually did his hip hop variant on Gangstar's Hard to Earn.
Wow.
And that was one of the hip hop variants, but the one that crushed them all, in my opinion. Once again, shout out to Caron Grant. That's my brother right there.
Dope.
He did the Wolverine variant in the old DMX cover. When
oh,
he was
yeah,
You all know what I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yeah.
I own it.
That was one of the roughest covers
that
out of all.
Yeah, I had that poster. Back.
Yeah.
Was it Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood?
Yep.
And then Laura Kenny.
And let me ask this question, Rob. I mean, do you think now that we get music, not necessarily, I mean, you know, as a kid, you know, I used to go, you buy an album, you bought an album, the cover sold you on some of these albums. You go in the store, you see it, and, you know, if you semi-like the group, you pick up the album cover, you know, and that was a thing. Now we get our music, you know, electronically, digital, you know, MP3,
and there's no covers.
And there's no covers. There's nothing here. There's nothing to get. There's nothing here. Nothing to connect to. Does that have an impact on it, or is it just,
you know? Sure, because the cover, It's marketing. It's just another the selling aspect of it. So that's where the reinvention has to come in, like Dinko was saying. Right. You know, you got to get creative.
Right. Because they've been selling the same superheroes over year after year after year.
Absolutely.
But you have to have the right teams with the right covers. And got to be reinvented.
Even more than just the covers, back when it came with that CD insert, right? And you'd be able to take that out, flip through
it. Right, like even in the CD, So you don't get that. Like,
there was no visual element.
Both our albums, we had the lyrics printed out, and that used to be the thing. You don't know what they're saying. Like, oh, that's, you know.
Right.
Yeah. It was more like the comic. It was like a comic when you open it up.
Now we have Shazam. Inside.
She had pictures and all of that.
So, well, I remember iTunes for a little while. iTunes for a little while was trying to give you that feeling back again, but it didn't really take off.
No, it's not there. And you know, you guys have all talked about coming up and, you know, reading comics and that visual thing. I know for us, being comic fans, we were shunned. Like, we sat in dark corners, and you know. What was it like, you know, on the hip hop scene? You know, it's cool to be a geek now. Were you reading comics, and was, you know, did you hide it, or were you proud about it?
Always proud about it. That's one thing. I mean, you know, you just got to be confident with anything, period. Like, comic books, I always read comic books. Like I said, I used to draw, you know, even rhyming. rhyming wasn't a pretty thing to do at first. Girls wasn't thinking that. Yeah. Rap just blew up last 35 years. So I came up in the middle of it, you know.
Until it be an MC. What's that?
Right. So, you know, she's looking at the neighborhood drug dealer, my man. It's like, you know, what's the media right there? There wasn't really no outlets for, like, local outlets as far as, like, for comic books, like, as big as it is now, like, Comic-Con, it's definitely took a process to grow.
Even so, comic book stores, just being able to go to a, I mean, and that's the thing. If you go to a comic book store now, and I had these conversations on different, as we were promoting on our different radio stations, and I tried to explain, you go to a comic book store, you go to any comic book store anywhere in America, you're going to see a cross-section of people. You're going to see old folks. You're going to see old folks with their grandfathers with their grandkids. You'll see grandmothers in there with their grandkids. And it's not that the grandmothers are bringing the kids there for the kids' sake. Some of them are flipping through the books to buy them themselves. So when you walk to any comic book store anywhere in America right now, it is the cross-section. It's this room. You know.
But it's come from, the marketing on it has just grown so big. Right. It's in everything. You know what I'm saying? The marketing, it's in the music, it's in the videos, it's in the game, it's in games. You know what I'm saying? So everybody has to see it sooner or later. A lot of the actors have become Marvel superheroes. You know, they're only known for that role, for being that superhero than any other job they had.
And
so,
not only they are they known for that role, that you know have actors who are fighting for the role.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I want to be Spawn. I want to be Spawn for the next 20 years. Right? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but Dinko, I got a question for you. Going back to what we were talking about with the Black Canary album.
Yeah.
If you had the opportunity to do an album as a character, well, let's say a couple characters, who would you pick and why?
Wow, man. I'd have to go to the comic book store and study a little more. Right, yeah, man. Cause they got, I mean, I've ran across so many, like, I have some anime, like, cartoon, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
That's crazy. Like, nobody's told stories about a scene. Like, you know, like, they done plotted some plans in my head. Like, that's dope. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's different people you can learn from. Like, I don't know. I couldn't really tell you. I'd have to create it.
Oh, I love that even more.
I got a question for both of you guys, right? I actually can relate a little bit from the artist aspect, be it drawing and rhyming. I cut an EP, and this guy across from me actually did the cover art for one of them.
Yeah,
and he made it.
Dope.
I was actually sitting in a comic store, and he made it look like it was a panel in a comic with my name across the top. Was that,
wow.
It was,
that's hot.
Yeah, it was like.
Can we see that?
Yeah.
Can you?
You know what? I can. You got it?
I'll try. Keep going.
So, what I wanted to ask you guys, like, because the connection to hip hop and comics, I know for me, like, I probably had the same come up as you guys have a little bit, but, as artists, right, you kind of envision yourself as these heroes, if not your own specific hero. Like, does that, like, proceed, like, or transfer over into the art form for you? Is that where the connection comes in at for you?
What, from music to comics?
Yeah, from music to comics. Because, like, for instance, like, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, but, like, with Wu-Tang Clan, we know, like, Method Man and Ghostface Killah for a lot of their aliases. We had Johnny Blaze, who is Ghost Rider, and Tony Stark, who knows Iron Man.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I was referencing earlier. There's always been that underground.
Yeah,
marriage.
It's always been there. It's always been there.
Yeah,
definitely.
And that's a perfect example what you just referenced.
Well, they created. I mean, they created their own backstories for this. You know, this the idea of Shaolin and all of that.
One of the first rhymes most rappers used to say was Superman. You know what I'm saying? Like Superman, super rhymes. You know, it's always been intertwined in there. You know, it's just a part of the arts.
Great catch. Right. We do have another question from the chat. Tim, I'm not going to say your last name in Nicole. I'm terrible with names.
Yeah.
Yeah, we put your names on this show. It's okay. It's
Samsonite. Way off. How, if at all, did the storyboard of comics influence your writing? So.
Who am I writing?
Yeah.
I mean, it, you could read comic books. Like I said, it influenced ideas there and here, you know, different things. I wouldn't say I'm more incorporated the art into the rhyme instead of, you know what I'm saying, coming out of that, you know.
Well, sure. And then let's a little follow up with that one as well. Since you're both artists and you both draw, when you're working on a piece, what are you listening to? And how does that affect what you're doing? Mm.
I could listen to nothing. Like, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's such a wide range. The creative process is unlimited to me. Like, it comes from everywhere and anywhere.
So do you find those kind of outside sounds and styles and genres? Does it affect the way that you put something on paper, whether that be rhyme or whether that be ink?
You kind of answered that from the top of the program tonight. Remember when he was saying that everything inspires you?
Sure, everyday life.
Period. Everything around me, man. It's like, you know,
Rob,
just absorb it.
No, it's the same. I mean, there is always music in the background when I'm working.
And as long as you see, you know, there's always art. There's always a light, something, a color, you know, edges, marks. It's always something.
So when you're working, Rob, what are you listening to? I mean, are you listening to a specific genre of music or just whatever is?
It's as eclectic as all the rockets going off inside my head. I'm serious. I mean, man, my music appreciation is vast.
Yeah.
It could be like classic rock and roll. It could be hip hop. It could be, you know, classic R&B.
Right. And I'm sure, soul. Like, depending on what you're doing, you know, Menti will make fun of me. When we go to a convention, my morning playlist might not be the most calm.
No.
Now you're putting yourself out there. No. You got to know now.
No. It's just screaming. It's just screaming for an hour.
I mean, you know, it's like some of my process sometimes. It's like when I drive, like, you know, I just turn from channel to channel. When I go to the channel, if I hear something, I don't hear something until I hear something. You know what I'm saying? Go to the next channel. Maybe I'll hear something here.
Because it'll hit you.
Yeah, exactly. It's a feeling. You know, once you feel it or see it, you'll know. And then it'll marry itself.
You know if Tom Waits one moment, you know, Aerosmith, you know.
Aerosmith. I mean, look at all of the great bands.
See, and that's the thing. Like with hip-hop, that's the one thing I say. It's the one music that incorporates every other music into
Absolutely.
It. Mm-hmm. Every other music doesn't incorporate, you know what I'm saying,
right.
The way hip-hop universally incorporates every music. You know what I'm saying?
And when you're looking around now, you're seeing, you know, just like in the comic industry, we're seeing acceptance. Hip hop is no longer, you know, there's edgy versions of everything, but hip hop's accepted. You know,
you've got
everyone listening to it.
Exactly.
Where, you know, early 90s, mid 90s, there was still that line.
It was still a line, right. It was still being dug out.
I was in middle school when at first I was like, I'm a rock guy. And my friend sat me down, and he's like, listen,
you're going to learn.
You're going to learn today.
Out this cool song.
And it blew me away. I mean, I remember the first time hearing Bring the Noise, Public Enemy, and Anthrax together.
Classic.
You know, the Judgment Night soundtrack. And I was an artist. You know, I'm a photographer, and I used to paint and draw. And when I found those outlets to inspire me, it made me connect to the music even more.
Yeah.
So it brings me to a question. When you're writing, it's for yourself, but do you ever picture what it's doing for the person listening to it? Do you, when you finish something, go, wow, this is going
to
impact
somebody? I just want it to be strong. I want it to be dominant. You know what I'm saying? I want it to stand by itself. I want it to be like, wow, that's a piece of work right there. That's it.
You know? Rob, we got a question in the chat for you. What would be your dream comic to work on? That's from Dave.
Oh man, I don't really. I think earlier in my career, I had like goals like that. It was like when you're young and you've always aspired to do this kind of work or work in this industry, you have those. Oh man, it'd be awesome if I ever got a chance to work on the X-Men or all of that. And I can honestly say, and I've been doing this for a while, so. And I purposefully, by choice, took a step back from, you know, the consistent and full-time mainstream work so that I could focus on myself and get to things that any freelancer will tell you working in this industry is hard to do and hard to make time for yourself because it's such a time demand on regular work. And you're not making money, let's just be real, unless you're working on something consistent or you have some sort of contractual arrangement.
Right.
So I took a step back from that, but I don't really have those kinds of, you know, I can honestly say it was more of the artists that I liked and their work or work ethic that I was attracted to. And I said, oh, I'd like to collaborate with this person one day, or I'd like to do a project with this person one day. It wasn't the, they were just cartoon characters to me.
Is there anybody left that you still, you know, haven't gotten to work with yet that you want to work with? And that could be,
I think if I was still in the industry, and when I say industry, I mean kind of mainstream, because I think that's what you're referencing when you say right. a dream character or book. No, I've worked with some incredible creative people. Some of the most talented people I've ever met in my life work in this field. So I've been fortunate to be able to collaborate with them at one time or another in my career. So no, and as far as the individual characters are concerned, I've been lucky enough to work on some really cool books.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
like if I was in the third grade and just fantasizing, oh, it'd be a real kick to work on Spider-Man one day. Well, okay, done that.
Check.
Yep. Yep. So,
well, and Dinko, is same kind of collaboration and music, whether it be a producer's or a feature on there. Is there anybody out there right now that you go, I'd like to create some art with and do something and bring them in there?
There was one artist there was a couple of artists that always like, man, I maybe aspired or inspired me, and I thought like it'd be, you know, you think about that, like you said, you know, like when you was young, you're like, yeah. But once you get in the game and you got your own voice, you like mm-hmm. okay. You know what I'm saying? I'm strong. But
and you got
like,
people stepping to you.
Exactly. So now you like,
wanna collab?
But like KRS-One. Mm-hmm. Like he the teacher, like the way he flowed on the mic, you know what I'm saying? I would want to be able to be on a song with him and see if I could match. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
like,
right, right.
Like, can I hang with this dude? Because I think, you know what I'm saying? I think I'm nice. I know he nice, but let's see if we could be nice together. Like, that's one dude. That's when the, oh, yeah. Actually, I told him, yeah. And actually, like,
you got a story to tell.
I got a story to tell.
Does he have a story to tell?
With the awesome tool. Good DJs, long time in the game. They put a lot of underground cats on before major radio was playing songs. They was working in the city. I forgot the station, but they had their own show. And the guy who named our group, Chuck D from Public Enemy, he named my group Leaders of the New School.
Right.
He gave Buster his name, and he gave C. Brown, Charlie Brown, his name. He's like, Dinko, keep his name. His name is original. You know what I'm saying? So I kept mine. But he actually was hosting the show. So me and Brown, we finished performing, and he comes out into the show, because it was like at the Hip Hop Gods tour we was on. We went across the U.S. It was us, Son of Berserk, Schoolie D. Mm. Schoolie D actually yep. does stuff with the video channel, with the cartoon, the fries, and all of that. He does the music, I think, or something.
Yep.
But yeah, it was him, Poor Righteous Teachers, Johnny Juice, Moni Love.
Wow.
And who else? I hope I don't miss nobody. Somebody else was on there. But anyway, he was like, yo, after we finished, he was like, yo, tell the people what you're doing, all of this. You know what? I want y'all to stay here. Don't go nowhere. Do this song with me. And he wanted us to do Rebel Without a Pause.
Wow. Crazy, wow.
Like the audience didn't know that that was
coming. Going to happen. We didn't know that was going to happen. Like, he just felt so good because it was such a good night. Because people in the crowd who performed, Big Daddy Kane had performed, Chill Rob G performed, Master Ace.
M.O.P.
M.O.P. Nice and Smooth. I think it was just Greg Knight. Smooth wasn't there. But it was just such a classic, legendary hip-hop night. And to be able to perform Rebel Without Pause with Chuck D, you know, he's like my professor, you know.
See, y'all literally freestyled a hip-hop moment there. Just.
Exactly. You put it right. That was a beautiful
that beat
thing.
Comes on and everybody loses their mind.
Did anybody document this?
Yes, yeah. It's definitely. You could go on my page or go on my Facebook page. It's on Instagram on a couple of sites.
Right. On your Instagram?
Yeah, D-I-N-C-O-D, Dinko D.
I'll be right back.
Let me ask you both a question, because I'm curious. Both of y'all are artists, and you produce art. So you're both artists and producers.
Right.
What kind of art do you consume?
Mm. Ooh. Mm. Sandwiches with the question.
I know. Consume. He ended up.
Everything.
Tomatoes on that.
No, but like we were saying, the process can come. It can come out. It comes out in so many ways. It's unlimited, man. Like I can't explain. Like.
inspiration's everywhere.
Everywhere. It's everywhere. There's no one spot. If I pick one spot, I would limit myself to what I'm able to do. So.
But what are you consuming?
Yeah, I think his question is, more.
I'm asking, you're putting art out. You're making product. You're giving product to somebody else. What products are you saying when you're out there, you know, to get your own art, to get somebody else's? What are you getting?
So when we're the consumer.
We're the consumer. Okay. So
what are you looking at? What are you listening to?
You just left the studio.
You could run through the genres. Like, I mean, I listen to a lot of new music, new hip hop. You know, it's not all the greatest, but there's great new hip hop. Just like there's all the old hip hop wasn't all great, but there's still good classic hip hop. But everything to me is either classic and timeless or it's momentary. You know what I'm saying?